We're back at the races. And absolutely thrilled for an opportunity to congratulate Neil Pessin and Bob Lothenbach on Bells the One's Grade 1 win in the now Derby City Distaff. Neil joins us. Neil, congratulations.
Yep, you there?
There we go. There's Neil Pess. Neil, well done. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. She ran a huge race.
You know, we've talked about her after the Raven run and after the winning colors and, you know, knowing that this opportunity was going to be there for her, you know, the way things turned out to get this Grade 1 win. You know, it's really the program that Mr. Lothenbach is engaged in, which he's really stepped up. I mean, this is really big for him, for you, and for the filly.
Oh, yeah, and I'm just happy that, you know, like I even told you before, after the winning colors, she still doesn't get a lot of the respect that she deserves. She does nothing but run her butt off, and she's won half her races, and maybe now she'll get a little respect from everybody.
This was, you know, this is one of those spots where, you know, you talk about the respect. It's been hard for anybody talking about the race, and I'm sure you understand this, and you're friends with Amos for years. You've competed against them for years. The way Serengeti Empress ran was very courageous, but give some credit to the way Corey Lannery did not get sucked in and waited and waited and launched the bid at exactly the necessary time.
Right, and that's the way this filly runs, and I've told you before, she needs a pace in front of her, which after the first quarter I wasn't sure we were going to get, but the second quarter was very strong. And that kind of helped us set up for her late kick. But that's her running style, and Serengeti has her running style where she has to go the lead. She has no other choice or she doesn't run well. So both fillies ran their hearts out. Neither one deserved to lose. I'm just happy I was on the winning end of it.
You know, had to be a little bit concerned when first Eddie Keneally makes the decision to not run Lady Kate, and actually that ended up being a savvy move by Eddie because he ends up getting a nice placement behind Monomoy Girl. But then when Mia Mischief came out, that was more of a surprise. So suddenly two other potential pace players disappear from the field. You had to be a little unnerved by that.
Well, I knew Lady Kate was coming out because Eddie told me he was going to run against Monomoy Girl because his main goal was to try and get a Grade 1 placing, which he did. And his filly ran a huge race against Monomoy Girl. So I knew she was out, but me and Mischief being in the one hole, I knew would have to send and go with Serengeti. And then when he was a late scratch, I'm thinking, oh, God, there's no speed in here. But we weren't going to change our game plan because my filly's got to run her race and Serengeti was going to run hers. And thankfully, Bellafina put a little pressure on her the second quarter.
She did. And actually, we should mention Scott Becker's filly pitched in, too. Wildwood's Beauty was kind of there. And then, as they were falling away, here came CC to basically pick up the mantle. And if there had been a window in that middle quarter where there wasn't somebody else to keep pressing, if she had gotten a little breather, she might not have been corralled. I mean, the difference, obviously, was noses bobbing on the wire.
Yes, and I think right at the end, I think once my filly got in front, Corey said she kind of just waited on the other filly to come back to her. So I think my filly may have had a little left in the tank. I don't know. All I know is they both ran their hearts out, and I was lucky enough to win the photo.
You know what's funny about that picture? I'm curious where you were sitting and how you saw it, because when they hit the wire live, I thought, oh, Belle got up. But then when they showed the slow-mo repeatedly, I thought, oh, maybe not. It was funny, and I questioned my first call initially. How did you see it when they hit the wire?
Well, right before the wire, I said, I've got it. And then Serengeti came back right, looked like on the wire, and I said, damn, I don't know. I don't know who got it. But I'll be honest with you, right at that time, I was just so happy with the way my filly ran. It did. I wanted to win, but it didn't matter as much. I don't know how that, it sounds bad, but I was just happy that my filly ran her race and showed up and earned the respect that she deserves.
Well, and as you mentioned, you know, I've used this historically, and you know, years ago, when you would read, you know, you read things like W.H.P. Robertson and Tessio and so forth, you know, horses that won more than they lost. And you cited, in fact, you know, she's now won half her races. That for years was an important distinction about the accomplishments of horses.
Yeah, and there's very few that can do that. There's a limited number running even today that have won half their races, but they've got two or three starts.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a hard accomplishment to do, to go through your conditions and then get to the stake level and still be able to maintain that level of racing.
How does this, I mean, obviously, I think when we talked, you know, earlier in the year, and when she had won the winning colors, kind of had an idea of where, you know, the season was going to go. But does this change anything? You know, the filly and mare sprint is going to be a war, and of course we'll see what Baffert's going to do with Gamine. She would add even more heavyweight strength, and we know that Amos has, you know, refocused Serengeti toward the filly and mare sprint. What's your thought about the fall approach toward Breeders' Cup?
Well, that's where we're headed. That'll be our next stop. If anyone listening has a really nice filly with a lot of speed they want to sell, I'd be interested.
Well, you would think there's going to be plenty of pace, and we should note, I mean, even though the Madison didn't go the way you would have liked, she likes it at Caneland, you know, she's run well at Caneland.
Yes, well, the Madison just didn't set up well, and there was no pace in there whatsoever. I mean, that's why Garana and Mia Mischief ran 1-2 all the way around the racetrack, and I was the only one to close. But they went just under 23, just under 46, and the track was fast that day. Whereas Churchill, they went 21, just under 22, and then 43-3. So that was the difference between the Madison and the race here at Churchill.
Has this conversation, and I suppose a Breeders' Cup performance might, you know, spell some of the you know, the decision making, in conversation with Mr. Lothenbach, what seems to be the long term plans for her?
Well, we really don't have a long term. We haven't discussed after the Breeders' Cup what we're doing, whether she goes in a sale, which he usually doesn't like to sell, or we keep her in training for another year, which after the Breeders' Cup, she's going to get turned out for 30 days no matter what. And or if we take her and put her in the breeding program.
Well, she, you know, you just look at her. I'm just looking from a figure standpoint, Neil. It does feel like she is still developing. She's out of that street crime mare, street mate, Brett Jones bred her, and she's turned into really a bargain at this point, $155,000 as a July Phasic yearling by Majestic Perfection. And it does feel like she is still improving. You know, three straight 90s buyers with the winning colors, the Madison, and now a 97. The career best was the winning colors. Any feel or any thoughts about, you know, which scenario, six or seven, with each passing start, do you get a better feel for what her best trip is?
Well, I think as long as it sets, it all depends on how the race sets up. If there's no pace in the race, she couldn't run against the caliber of fillies she ran against and beat them on Saturday. But if there's an honest pace, she's got a chance to beat any filly in the country. I don't care who you bring. If it's an honest pace, she's going to be right there at the end because she's going to give her 110%. She's always been a hard-trying filly and a very sound filly, which I wish I hadn't said that now because I'll go to the barn tomorrow and something will be wrong. But she just goes out and tries, and she has gotten better. I think she's held her weight well. She's eating well. And I think she's a lot better than she was last year when she won the Raven Run. And she just seems to keep getting better and improving all the time. As long as I don't get in her way, I think we'll be right there at the Breeders' Cup.
Well, you know, we had... you know, we had, in previewing the race, you know, we had said that the alternate option, you know, to Serengeti and CC felt like Bell, and if you know the pace scenario unfolded, and of course Greg Foley had had similar success on Friday when it came to Sconson picking off the Wilkes and Cox fillies, who set a pace going at each other. I thought the way Corey waited was just amazing, and you know, because it's so easy to get. For a jock, you know, you're wondering, you know, when do I launch? And he just could not have picked a better time to start to ask and start to engage the rally.
Well, every time we work her, we always work her in company. And she always starts out anywhere from 2 to 5 lengths behind the horse she's with. And Corey will wait, and we've discussed it in the past, and he's excellent at doing it. He'll wait to the eighth pole, even if he's still 3 behind, to go by the workmate. And he knew what kind of kick she had. I mean, in a lot of her works, she'll finish the last eighth in less than 11. She'll go 10 and change with her ears pricked, not asking her. She just accelerates. So he knew what he had under him and knew what kind of kick she would have. So that's why he was confident in the way he rode her and in waiting as long as he did.
You know, and you talk about those works, and you look at the timing, and she, it's funny, she works fast without working bullets, if you know what I mean. You know, a minute
right.
And one, right, a fourth of 38, a minute and two, fifth of 30, 47 and three, third of 93. And so she really is an example in some ways of, you know, you can't just look at the time of a work to determine how a horse is necessarily coming in. That's why the description of the way the work was orchestrated and finished, you know, whether it was backwards, fast early, slow late, or in the case of her, you know, finishing with a flourish.
Yeah, and just watching her work, I mean, it's effortless when she works. All Corey does is move his hands, and she just accelerates. So, you know, he knew her, and he knew she had a big kick and would turn it on for him at the end, and that's why he could be confident to sit back and wait as long as he did. But that's also the way this filly has to be ridden. You know, she's got a quarter of a mile move, and if you ask her at the half-mile pole, she's going to flatten out. And that's kind of what happened in California. They asked her at the half-mile pole wide around the outside, and she got up to third and then flattened out.
Well, this conversion, a grade one for you, for her, for Mr. Lothenbach, and we should mention for Airdrie, Majestic Perfection, counts for them too. And Neil, talk about what it means to you at this point in your career. You have plenty of graded stakes, but your first grade one.
Yeah, placed in grade ones. I've won a bunch of grade twos and threes, but it's always nice to have a grade one win next to your name. And it's hard to do, you know, when you're a smaller stable, it's hard to do. Because, one, it's hard just to get a filly anywhere near her to start with. And, two, to actually win a grade one against all the higher echelon of trainers, it's not easy. It's hard to even be able to have a horse you think can compete in those races. So just to be able to win one finally, it's kind of a boulder off your shoulders.
Well done. Well done. Neil, we should also touch on a couple of the other runners from the weekend, because you had, I thought, when handicapping and some of the people that we talked to you know, going into the weekend, Tell Your Daddy actually got some love going into that turf sprint. And then on Thursday, I think it was, that Captain Mastery looks like there's something to him, and ended up third in that maiden, but I don't think going to be a maiden long.
No, well, that race was supposed to be a mile on the turf.
Right.
And if it had stayed a mile on the turf, I thought he had a big chance to win. But a one-turn mile on the dirt is probably the toughest race there is on a horse first time out. And I think he's going to be a better turf horse than dirt horse, but he was ready to run, so I decided to go ahead and run and get a race in him. And I thought he ran big. He even had to check and angle out real hard in the stretch. About the eighth pole, he kind of had to wait and then angle out. And it didn't cost him the win, but still he ran a good third. And when he gets, hopefully next time we'll be back on the turf. And I think he'll be tough. Tell your daddy just really didn't care for the soft turf. He was bobbing up and down on it and just didn't like it. And I had another filly in, Audrey's Time, that didn't run any good either on Friday. But I think she's going to be cut out to be a nice filly.
Tell everybody
who wanted to keep an eye on.
Well, and in addition to Audrey, tell everybody who that Captain Mastery is named for.
He's named for a dear friend of mine that died a couple years ago. He was a retired captain off the police force in New Orleans. He was 91 when he died, and any day I didn't have a horse in New Orleans, we'd go to lunch. So, and he was just a nice guy, would do anything in the world for anybody. He was very straight-laced. The reason he quit the police force back a long time ago, he said it was too crooked, and he got out. So that's the kind of guy he was, though. And if you told him to watch over $10,200, when you came back, there might be $10,201 in there.
what were his favorite lunch spots? We can't leave you without a couple of food conversation points. Where would you guys go?
Well, we'd go to Pascal Manali's and get a barbecue shrimp sandwich every Friday with a crab meat remoulade, which was very good. We'd go to Five Happiness, a Chinese restaurant on Carrollton in New Orleans. And then we'd pick different spots to go after that. We just kind of mix it up a little bit. Those were Monday and Friday spots.
I love it. Unbelievable. Neil, you know, I should mention I had Mike Stidham and Hillary was with him. We had them on TV on our Sunday show, the last Sunday show of the year here at Saratoga, and I brought you up with them, and both of their eyes lit up, you know, when I said how great it was for you to win that Grade One. And there's few more popular people on the circuit than you, and everybody delighted for the Grade One win.
Well, thank you. And you had a couple good guests on. Mike's had an excellent career. I don't know how many Grade Ones he's had, but it's more than me. And they do well wherever they go.
Neil Pessin. Just tremendous. I just delighted for you. And in fact, Jay Pribman, who is also one of your biggest boosters, Jay took my line. I used to reserve, now that Scooter Dickey's retired, whenever Scooter would win big, I'd send out on Twitter, you know, when Scooter Dickey wins, we all win. And Jay sent me a text. He said, when Neil Pessin wins, we all win.
Well, thank you. Tell Jay I appreciate that. I'll have to give him a call and ask him where the print was. I didn't see any print.
Love it. Neil Pessin, everybody. And Bell's the one. And now 7-for-14. And just, you know, dangerous with a little bit of pace set up. And you got to think there'll be plenty of pace for her to chase when we get to Keeneland for the Filly and Mare Sprint in the Breeders' Cup. And we thank Neil. Always a pleasure and thrilled to have Neil on. And Neil, we'll talk soon.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it.
Not at all. Neil Pessin, everybody. And we go from Neil Pessin to another horseman that has got the same kind of appreciation and respect of his peers and horse players, and seemingly increasingly with some owners, too, because Butchie Reed joins us after the spinaway win on Sunday, Vequist for Gary Barber, and some more Gary Barber trainees on their way to Butch. And then yesterday, Monday Morning Quarterback returns. Monday Morning QB, second yesterday in the Tessio. Butch, congratulations.
Thank you. Thanks for the build up there, too. Yeah, it was a good weekend, for sure.
Well, and talk about this filly that had a bit of a look to her, and it's funny because Gary Barber had told me earlier in the week, he said, you know, don't sleep on Vequist. They think she's going to run well. And, you know, you must have thought she was going to, you know, be competitive. You don't run maidens in Grade Ones on a lark.
Well, I'll be honest with you. You know, it's thank God Mr. Barber and Mr. Wachtel are very aggressive, because I was kind of looking for a maiden race for her, but... They jumped in after her maiden race at the year at Parks, and she ran really well, going 4.5 furlongs. But I knew that was way under her best distance. I was just trying to get a race under her belt. So, you know, it was their aggressiveness that got us to the grade one. And I was glad to be able to do, you know, first time out of the box to win a grade one for him. So that was a pretty good beginning, I'd say.
Without a doubt. And, you know, the part of this that is a little bit, the part that is a little stunning is how dominant she was. I mean, and then you compare it to what happened yesterday with the Asmussen colt and the hopeful. Both wins were just dominant.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you can never expect to win anything like that, but I knew she was doing very well, and my wife, Virginia, got her up there and settled in at Saratoga, and she really seemed to enjoy herself up there and loved the fresh mountain air and trained really well over the racetrack. So we had a feeling she was going to give a pretty good account of herself.
Well, she did, and more. I mean, talk about, you know, the conversation coming in and you know, what kind of an approach you were going to take in here.
Well, you know, we pretty much knew. We looked at the race, and I had talked to, you know, the jock before the race, so there was a fair amount of speed in there. And, you know, it looked like, you know, a couple of horses had gone wire to wire in their debuts. And, you know, I knew that she was a filly, never minded the dirt in her face, and never showed any problem with any of those kind of, you know, company situations. So, I mean, she had breezed, and we had breezed her. I breezed her one time out of the gate here at Philly, and she was supposed to go a half a mile. She ended up going 3/4 and like 1:13 and galloped out to 7/8 and 1:26. So we had a pretty good inkling that the distance was going to be no problem. And any distances from here, I don't believe we're going to be a problem. So, you know, we came in with a pretty good feeling. But you never, you know, a 4.5 furlong race at Parks to a grade one at Saratoga is quite a leap, but she handled it with very well, it looked like.
Did you reach out to Kieran for Louie, or did Kieran reach for you?
That was actually Adam. Adam has got a nice connection. He's a big Louie-sized fan, and so am I, for that matter.
Yeah.
But he had reached out early, and I was a little surprised that Kieran would give you a call in a grade one with a maiden, but everybody took the chance, and everybody got paid off for it. So it worked out very well.
Speaking of some of the back workings when it comes to VQuist, some interesting things must have gone on here, because she RNA'd as a Keeneland yearling, and in fact, the Seitzes, Brookdale had her, and she RNA'd for 120. How did you end up with her?
Well, I had actually, the owner, Tom McGrath of Swilkin Stable, I've been his trainer for years.
Right.
And I bought Vero Amore, the mother of VQuist, for him out of the Timonium 2-year-old training cell for $15,000. And we ran her, and she was quite successful for us.
Yeah.
She was about a total of about 6 inches of being a multiple graded stakes winner, but she got beat about 2 inches in the Black Eyed Susan and then another one in the wintertime New York stakes. So she was a quality filly for us. And, yeah, Tom sent her down to Brookdale, and they handled the breeding end of it. I try and stay away from that. So, yeah, Mr. Seitz did a great job, and, you know, Tom stuck with the filly and, you know, and ended up breeding a Nyquist, and it certainly seems to have worked out so far.
Yeah, it's tremendous. And, you know, you talked about the aptitude for a route of ground and stretching out. I mean, not just by Nyquist, but she's out of, you mentioned Vero Amore, who's a mineshaft herself.
Absolutely. You know, and this filly is much larger. Vero Amore was kind of a smaller filly, and but she would run all day. She was just a hard trier. And this filly's already, you know, a hand and a half. Bigger than Vero Amore ever was in her life, and I think she's still growing. So, and as far as the yearling, yeah, the yearling sale was kind of strange. You can see who I looked at her down there at the sale, and many people looked at her, and nobody vetted her. And you know, to this day, I don't know why. There was, I guess, something about her they didn't like, and I think something like 70 people had pulled her out and looked at her, and not one vet. So it was kind of a strange. I wasn't sure, but thank God it worked out like that, and. I'm the lucky recipient to be able to keep control of the filly.
Well, I'm gonna mention somebody involved in the backstory here because I think so highly of him, and in fact, we're partners with Dave Scanlon and Marty Shapiro on a 2-year-old by McLean's Music, and going back with Vero Amore, Dave developed her and was a. You know, you bought, right, as a 2-year-old at Timonium.
I mean, is that true? I'm not even sure. We've done very well out of that, Timonium 2-year-old training sale. We really enjoy that sale, and we've been a customer there every year for, close to 20 years now, I guess. And, David does a real good job, and I've done business with his dad, and his dad used to train right next to me at Monmouth Park when we were way back when, so... Yeah, and I wasn't sure of that, but that's great. Yeah, David did a nice job with the horse. Yeah,
I love it. It's exciting, and I'm happy for everybody involved here. You mentioned Adam Wachtel and Gary Barber, and to win off by 9, now you look toward the fall. Some thoughts about. What you do with her, the Breeders' Cup, you would think would be irresistible. Intermediate step 2?
Yeah. Unfortunately, we're a little limited on time, so we've got to make a decision. We're definitely thinking Breeders' Cup, and we'll have to choose between probably just a couple of races because there's only really time for one more start. So it may likely come down to a decision between the Frisette in New York and the Alcibiades down at Keeneland. So we'll kind of take our time. Well, the first thing we got to make sure our horse is good. So far she's come out of the race fantastically, hasn't missed a note, and was bouncing around the barn this morning. So we're very happy with that way so far. But we've got a couple of weeks and kind of look out, see how things shake out. But I kind of would like to get a race around 2 turns for her before we do go to the Breeders' Cup. So that'll be all part of the decision-making process, and we'll get together with Mr. McGrath and Mr. Barber and Mr. Wachtel and figure it all out.
Outstanding, and of course, the opportunity to, frankly, to run over the surface at Keeneland probably goes a long way. But I'm sure a lot of people will be thinking that as well. So
it'd probably be a pretty crowded field down there. If I had to guess right now, so but you never know how things are going to turn out. So you got to keep your eyes open and ears open, and we'll be doing all the research and figure it out from there.
Well, look forward to it. In the meantime, we got to bring up Monday Morning QB, who you have to be happy with off that kind of a layoff to run that well in the Tessio.
No, very much so. He was. We had him in a turf race about a week ago, but he didn't. Unfortunately, didn't draw into the extras. So we went ahead and took a shot in the Tessio, and thinking maybe he would be a tad short because it's pretty tough all the 9-month layoff to go 1 1/8. But he did it with a bomb, and he had trained extremely well coming into the race, so that's why we decided to go ahead and take a shot. And the only thing we're a little disappointed, he was a little late switching leads for us, but he's had that habit, and that was one of the reasons we gave him the time off. And he does it perfectly in the morning, but he kind of loses concentration a little bit in the afternoon. So we're maybe even thinking about blinkers or something, kind of a little bit of an attitude adjustment for him that just put the finer finishing touches on him. But it was a great effort, and he came out of it very well, too. So I couldn't be more pleased with him.
Would you consider, obviously you're running the Tessio. If you beat Happy Saver, who was, a short price favorite, the second only to him, if you had won, you get an instant pass into the Preakness. Will you consider it?
Oh, I'm sure that's still on the table. Glenn Bennett and Chuck Zackley were, of course, on the text line last night, and we started throwing it back and forth. But we'll see what the race comes up looking like, and we're definitely going to keep it open as an option. I think he definitely needed that race a little bit yesterday, and if he bounces back like I hope he does, it's certainly not out of consideration, put it that way.
All right, so we'll put him on a possible. We'll put him as a possible on the list. What kept him out since February?
Oh yeah, as I say, he's a big horse. He was already 1,200 pounds at the end of his 2-year-old year. I was kind of interested to see how much he weighed yesterday down at Laurel, where they weigh the horses, but they didn't have the scale working yesterday, so I didn't get to see it. But he's a huge horse. I mean, he's easily 1,200 pounds, or probably over now, and was just a big baby. And he had some bad habits. He wasn't breaking out of the gate real clean, and he was, failed to switch leads I think it was the Withers, which I thought he broke better in Switzerland there, he would have won that race. So we wanted to give him some time. We sent him down to Barry Eisenman's farm down in Ocala, Florida, and Barry's been taking care of our yearlings and our layups for quite a few years now, and he does a fantastic job. And Barry worked really well with him, let him mature, let him fill in a little bit, you know, and those big horses, you got to let those joints tighten up as they get into the early part of the three-year-old year. And, you know, and Chuck Zackney and Glenn did a great job in thinking it through and giving him the time that he needed, and that hopefully it'll really pay off here in the fall. So
tremendous. We talk about all the successes, but we also got to talk about the disappointments. Project Whiskey, what happened in the Weber City?
She didn't get away real clean, and I'm not sure why that was. The horse next to her really acted up, and she's the kind of filly who kind of likes to lay up close. You know, she doesn't need to be on the lead, but she doesn't want to be any more than a couple lengths out of it, sit in a stalking spot, which was our plan yesterday with Trevor. But he was disappointed with the guys that handled him at the gate, and she didn't get away good, and then she really wasn't her bag. She's not used to eating all that dirt like she did yesterday. And another thing, as I look at her form trying to analyze it, she's only run two really bad races in her career, and they've both been a Laurel. So if there's some kind of connection there that she doesn't really handle that surface too well, but maybe that could be it. But I'll tell you, she was bouncing around the barn this morning, bucking and squealing like she didn't even run. So we're going to give her a mulligan on that one. She's sound and happy, and we're going to look for we still haven't ruled her out for the Black Eyed Susan, but because it has run over a Pimlico, so we don't have to worry about the Laurel surface. But, we'll find something for her, and we just got to get her confidence back a little bit. But physically, she's doing very well, so we'll give her a mulligan on that one yesterday.
Well, and you had already, you'd already seemingly made the prudent decision not to compete with her in the Oaks, in the Kentucky Oaks, and so you were trying to do the right thing, and keeping a longer term goal of like a Black Eyed Susan, because the Weber City was like the Tessio, it was a win and you're in, so you were doing the right thing. So sometimes
I think so. Yeah, we took the conservative, approach, but sometimes that always doesn't work out either. So,
exactly.
There's a lot of factors that go into winning a horse race, and only one way to win it, as they used to say. So, yeah.
Well, you also were involved in two of the Pennsylvania stakes, and Smooth B ran well in the Marshall Jenny, and
I think he beat everybody he was supposed to have to beat in there, but then a 15-1 shot just ran the race of his life, and we couldn't quite get to him. But yeah, Smooth B's a tough old guy. We really like him, and he's. He's been a good campaigner for us, and he came out of it happy. So he's earning his keep, and he's we've had that whole family out of that mare, Fat Cat and Disco Rose, and we've got the next one coming along and by the name of Four Harp. So that mare, Katarina Disco, has definitely been very good to us. So and we had a couple other first-year, 2-year-old run well, and so it was a good day at Park, not a great day. I think anything would have been a letdown after Sunday, but it was still a good weekend all in all. So.
We should also mention earlier in the week, kind of unbeknownst, you had that 3-year-old, that Mr. Thrifty, 79 buyer breaking the maiden, the 3-year-old.
Did he run that? Yeah, he ran. He was very, he's a horse who all along we thought he's been better than he's been giving us. In his debut last year, he got beat a nose by Mischievous Alex, who came back and ran several graded state races,
sure,
and turned out to be one of the top 3-year-olds, and he just ran a few bad ones. We took him up to Saratoga, and maybe that got his confidence shaken a little bit. But we came back here, and in by Poseidon, my other Grade One winner, we kind of maybe pigeonholed him into a sprinter, and now we've got him around, stretched around two turns, and he seems to be flourishing with that. So he maybe fooled us a little bit, but. Eventually, we're not all that sharp, but eventually we'll figure out what they need. So, we're happy with the way he's going, too. So.
Well, you mentioned Poseidon's Warrior, and, of course, your other Grade One also at Saratoga in the Vanderbilt back 8 years ago, 2012, with Poseidon. Yeah. And if you're going to win Grade Ones, why not win them at Saratoga?
That's what I say. And that's Tom McGrath, who's been an owner for not a real long time. Maybe 10 years or something like that, I think. And he's already got two Grade One wins at Saratoga. They're both his horses. So Tom seems to be the lucky charm up there at Saratoga. So it worked out great.
Well, you and Jenny obviously weigh heavily on all of these successes. Butchie, congratulations. Absolutely thrilled, and look to see her in at Keeneland, whether it or at Belmont, either way, toward Breeders' Cup.
All right. Sounds good. Good talking to you, Steve. Yep. We're looking forward to a big fall.
And well on the way. Monday morning QB back as well yesterday in the Tessio. So a lot of good things going on. And Project Whiskey might end up running Friday too. So we might see Butchie and Jenny at Pimlico. We'll stay right here. We've got 15 minutes to fill out the morning, and Nicole Russo standing by. And Nicole and Marty, as I've said, and as Jay actually echoed earlier last hour, Nicole and Marty were simply tireless, following everything, having to do the work of usually eight correspondents at Churchill Downs for Oaks and Derby. Nicole, tremendous job, you, Marty, and everybody working remotely.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm always proud to be a part of the team at DRF, and yeah, I mean, Marty McGee just tireless, you know, the whole week. We had a great staff off site. I know you saw Jay as well as Marcus Hirsch pitching in, writing some race recaps and some features and other items during the week. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, you know, Barbara Livingston and her, you know, terrific team. They were reduced in numbers as well at Churchill, and they still managed to cover just so many angles and really capture the moment of just, you know, a surreal and unique and watershed derby. And also, you know, I'm going to give a shout out to for the National Turf Writers and Broadcasters Association. The majority of the media were not allowed to be on the backstretch at Churchill Downs because of biosecurity measures, but Churchill worked with the Turf Writers Association to set us up with a handful of credentials so that we could set up a pool reporting system for the people who weren't able to be on site or weren't able to kind of go behind the scenes. And Alicia Hughes, Byron King, Jenny Reese, and Greg Hall worked alongside them all week in our pool reporting system. And, you know, they really just did, you know, tireless work trying to cover this derby from all angles as well. You know, I'm privileged to be a part of, you know, a lot of great teams this week.
Well, and your work was just, you just churned out from a lot of the different angles. And of course, we're going to talk in a minute about tomorrow and the start of the Phasic sale and the start of the yearling sales season. And so a lot of your coverage does include a bend when it comes to pedigree and the influence that, you know, what it's going to influence toward stallion markets. And this win in the Derby by Authentic, major plus. I mean, I don't know what else Into Mischief was supposed to, you know, how much more gilding the lily can take. But, you know, eventually the weight of the gold will kill the flower. This, you know, this is something that, you know, was the really the last, that piece of the puzzle that, you know, falls off the table and no one can find.
Yeah, you know, checking off that classic winner on his resume for Into Mischief, and he had been knocking at the door. You know, a few years ago, he had Florida Derby winner Audible finish third behind Justifying Good Magic in the Derby. Last year, he had Owendale, who's a very nice, consistent horse, finish third in the Preakness. So he'd been knocking at the door, but yeah, no question that kind of breakthrough classic winner at the mile and a quarter, you know, checking that off for Into Mischief, who you know, claimed his first leading sire title last year, you know, on the back of Kafefi winning the female sprint and the three-year-old Philly Eclipse Award titles. So I think there were some questions out there about Into Mischief's ability to, you know, truly break through with that route-running classic horse. And, you know, now he's answered that question. And really, how much higher can he climb? You know, he's just steadily risen through the ranks from, you know, 2012, the year his first two-year-olds hit the track. He bred 50 mares and was standing for $7,500. And now, you know, he's been covering books of 200 plus for several years now. His fee was $175,000 this year. He's just getting, you know, better and better and better mares in each book as well. You know, so that it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy when the Stallions start getting those outstanding mares. You know, there he could really climb to some new heights in coming years. And, you know, he's starting to establish himself already, you know, with his first sons having had runners for less than 5 years. He's starting to establish himself already, I think, as a potential breakout sire of sires. Of course, Golden Sense has done so well, was among the leading freshman sires, leading sophomore sires of his class. He's got horses like By My Standards, who just won the Ali Seba out there. And, you know, Spendthrift introduced his son Maximus Mischief this year, and they have the rights to, you know, several other sons of Into Mischief and Golden Sense, including, of course, Authentic, who they own the majority interest in. And, you know, Into Mischief with several other young sons outside the Spencer family in the pipeline, including like Practical Joke, who will have his first yearlings to sale this week, in Practical Joke, who stands at Ashford Stud. And, you know, really, I think that's a part of the story we're really going to be looking at in coming years are, you know, the sons and grandsons of Into Mischief at Stud, because that's really his chance to build his legacy.
Expand for a second before we launch into the start of the sale season tomorrow. You reference Spendthrift, and a big part of the story I know has been there's been a big distraction about the ownership side when it comes to the My Racehorse element. But as Bob Baffert yesterday referenced, and did well in advance, in fact, after the Haskell, I'm thinking about it, and Baffert was effusive talking about B. Wayne Hughes and, you know, the urgency and you know the how excited really he was to have a horse that could do something like this for Hughes. And then when you fold in people like Mark Toothaker and Ned Toffee, and you know, you wrote about it in your summary piece, this was a win that means a lot, not just to the business side, but it means a lot to people who are, you know, just live and breathe the sport and the industry.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And it was an incredibly emotional, you know, half an hour for them, because of course Spencer Farm also co-owns Thousand Words with Albaugh Family Stables, and you know, they walk over, you know, with Authentic, who they own the majority share in partnership, or with Thousand Words, who they co-own. And you know, all of a sudden you have this situation with you know, Thousand Words, who's thankfully unscathed in the paddock. And, you know, Mark Toothaker told me that, you know, the next day he goes, wow, you really can't say I have a Kentucky Derby horse until they're in the starting gate. But then, you know, Mark kind of said, you know, the racing gods, you know, as he put it, sort of, you know, came through for them and gave them this one with Authentic, you know, who's by their leading stallion, you know, so that's incredibly emotional. And, you know, B. Wayne Hughes, I sort of think, you know, he's, you know, demonstrably been a guy who's willing to, you know, kind of innovate and shake things up a little bit in the marketplace and to try to grow the sport, you know, at the grassroots level. He has, you know, he's introduced all these programs, which, you know, some other farms have now adopted and formed to incentivize his young stallions, such as the Breed Secure program, you know, which guarantees you a profit on the stud fee. And, of course, the Share the Upside program, where, you know, you buy in on a young stallion and, you know, perhaps strike gold with him. You know, I know those programs, you know, have really taken root in the industry. So that's, you know, a concrete example of his innovation. And a number of farms now have adopted them in some way, shape, or form. And then I think, you know, their involvement with My Racehorse, which is one of these, you know, many sort of club models that, you know, has come up in recent years, like the Churchill Racing Club, Nexus Racing, you know, many of these ones that sort of, you know, offer the small one-time buy-in fee. And really what you're buying is the ownership experience and the excitement. And, you know, if you look at some of the other groups, you know, so I think the Churchill Racing Club is a great example. And a number of the people in that group have gone on to buy into other partnerships and sort of deepen their involvement in thoroughbred ownership. So I think that's what, you know, a number of these groups are hoping to do to grow the sport a little bit. So I think, you know, B. Wayne Hughes' involvement with My Racehorse is sort of another example of his willingness, you know, to to step in and innovate, you know, because he's demonstrably been somebody who's not afraid to go off the beaten path, you know, so certainly authentic, you know, kind of delivered on the Spendthrift vision on a number of levels, I think.
Well, Bob Baffert mentioned this a while back, and talked about, you know, well in advance of Derby. Either it was after Haskell, or it might have even been, you know, earlier in the year when Authentic was emerging, and he talked about it then. So that's certainly, you know, part of it. And I wanted to include it. We've got about 4 or 5 minutes, Nicole, to set up the action that kicks off tomorrow. Very intense period here between lead up to Derby and through the weekend, and then immediately the horsemen, you know, out to Newton Paddocks and going through the yearlings. They'll sell through the next couple of days, and then a quick turnaround and preparations for Keeneland. Some thoughts going in, and certainly there were some stallions, young stallions, that got some boosts over the last couple of days. The remarkable pair yesterday for Hillendale with Violence and McLean's Music, the two juvenile winners. Nyquist, of course, on Sunday. We just got off the phone with Butchie Reed, getting the spinaway win. You know, then you fold in, you know, all the other summer action that puts certain stallions top of mind going into the yearling season.
Yeah, and you know, I think you know, we'll see some of the usual suspects at the top of the marketplace, you know, as well. You know, when I was shortlisting these sales, kind of Curlin, Pioneer of the Nile, it seemed, you know, who there's going to be a limited supply of his yearlings, unfortunately, coming, you know, sadly. I think every time I turned around and shortlisted a good horse, it was by one of those established sires. But, you know, as you mentioned, kind of a flurry of activity in Kentucky here. And I do think the sale companies are cautiously optimistic for these sales, because a lot of times what we see, you know, in November is that the sales sort of get, you know, reflected glow and some momentum from the Breeders' Cup in close proximity. And I really think that they're hoping that these sales now falling after the Derby will have sort of a similar effect. But of course, this is a completely unprecedented marketplace with the, you know, pandemic, and with it being, you know, slightly more difficult for certain buyers to attend the sales and et cetera. You know, so I think we're going to set the table tomorrow at Phasic Tipped In, where the catalog highlight tomorrow, the first day of the major market yearling season, is actually a half brother to Tis the Law. So I think we'll sort of set the market tomorrow and see what momentum the season could build into Thursday and beyond.
Give a glance to the first crop stallions, because these will be the offerings. You know, typically by now, we would have had the July sale, and we would have had Saratoga, and we would already be familiar with you know, potentially some of the, you know, the names that are going to light up the tote board. Give us a glance ahead.
Sure. Well, I think, you know, the obvious two names at the top of the class are Gunrunner and Arrogate, who, of course, were tied together so closely on the racetrack. You know, both got outstanding first books of mares, and Arrogate, you know, unfortunately, there will be the sort of urgency to acquire his progeny because, again, there's going to be a limited supply with his untimely death. Both did very well with their first weanlings last year. Gunrunner in particular had a $750,000 filly out of grade one winner Love and Pride at Phasic November last fall, who's going to be a pinhook prospect at Keeneland September. She could certainly give him a seven-figure yearling, assuming that she's turned the page well from her weanling year to her yearling year. Arrogate got his outstanding first book, including the likes of Songbird. Mandy Pope has entered, you know, several of her well-bred yearlings at Keeneland September. And then, you know, sort of some of the less obvious ones, Mastery and Unified, both like Gunrunner by Candy Ride. They've really sort of gotten, you know, sort of some quietly good reviews, and, you know, their weanlings sold for several times the Studsby. I expect them to, you know, sort of get some attention. Practical Joke by Into Mischief, who I mentioned. We also have, you know, from one exciting sire line, Lord Nelson could be one of the last, you know, really exciting sons of Sire of Sires Pulpit.
Yep.
And then Pulpit's son Tappet with Cupid and others. So really, behind the two obvious names, I think it's a deep, well-matched class.
Well, and the couple others that certainly, I think, are going to garner attention, and you referred to Pioneer of the Nile, the classic Empire Yearlings.
Yeah.
Are going to be watched. Mastery was, right, you mentioned, was a big success going back to the weanling market. This is always one of the fun parts. I would think that Dancing Candy may be a sleeper in here.
Well, and at Basic Tipton, he has a half sibling to Swiss Skydiver from his first crop. But you're right, another horse from that Candy Ride sire line that, you know, just gets race horses.
Well, we'll start to get into the numbers tomorrow. Sid Fernando is going to join us, of course, the usual Wednesday visit. But fabulous coverage by Nicole Russo in any area. And you can download a big, beautiful fall yearling sale feature, 20-page feature that Nicole pretty much, I think, wrote everything. Nicole, tremendous job, and we'll probably reach to you, you know, between now and the start of Keeneland, and regular reports to the yearling market season. Thanks so much.
Thanks for the kind words. I'm looking forward to it.
Nicole Russo, everybody, who you absolutely need to be following, and it is really DRF Russo. It's just a huge talent, and is so polished and can handle any, you know, can write advances, recaps of races, handicap, the hard news, breeding, everything. This was a fun morning. We'll be back with you tomorrow, 9 o'clock. Thanks, everybody.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.